Okay, in a moment, we're going to go behind the secret door number two to find out who our second guest is tonight, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, I finally got John Rhodes right, but it would have taken a while, and had he not given me the clues, I was going to have to give up. But let's open up secret door number two. Come on in. Who's there? Hi there.
Hello, George.
Hello.
You know, we have all kinds of amazing systems and electronic gadgets, and they're all hooked up to the internet now, aren't they?
I know this voice, Lauren Weinstein.
Oh, I can't even do the rest here.
The minute I heard internet, I knew it was you. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm sorry about the voice. It's chilly here behind.
The voice behind was good. The voice was good, except, you know, I had you on just a few days ago, right, as we were talking about some things. And you were in my mind.
You know what I should have done? I should have said something about plumbing.
That's right. That would have
thrown me. You know, then you would have thought I was someone else, and I could have, you know, done the rest of the spiel here.
So. That's true. Well, but I would have asked you for clues, and you would have had to give up. This is kind of fun, isn't it?
This is very fun. And happy early holidays here.
You too. You too, by the way. You know, we do this twice a year, secret door programs. And, you know, I've been stumped before, and... You know, sometimes the guest has not told me who they were, and so I had to flutter around until I was able to find out who they were. But this is fun. What's going on with you now?
Well, you know, things kind of slow down this time of the year. I think that's probably a good thing. It gives everyone a chance to kind of think back over the year and what issues there are that we've dealt with and what's coming up for next year and kind of prepare ourselves for the battles yet to come.
My daughter sent me a little email and said, Papa, let me give you a call in about an hour. And she did. And she said, this is what our kids want, her kids, my grandchildren, want for Christmas. And she laid out all these electronic gadgets that these little kids, and these kids, they're 10 and 9. They're little ones. But how did they get into this stuff so early?
Yeah, I had Lincoln Logs.
I had an Erector set.
Yeah, a 7.5 Erector set over for me. Yeah, right. You know, it's and now it's not just a matter of having electronic gadgets for kids. They have to be internet connected and you know, wireless. So
and you know, GPS works and all this stuff. Totally. It is amazing what social networking has done.
Yeah, for good and for not so good. But that's the challenge is to steer this toward the good. And toward the learning experiences and the educational experiences, and to you know, help kids learn how to turn these technologies to their advantage and to protect themselves from the things that can go wrong.
I want to ask you in a minute about the iPad and the Amazon, the Kindle Fire, and things like that. But what's this story where Apple won a patent right against HTC and Android?
Yeah, I mean.
What is that?
If you get me started on patents, George, I mean it's going to, you know, take 5 hours here.
Okay.
You know what's happened is that the patent system in this country in particular has gone completely wacko, and ever since the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the USPTO, started allowing business method patents and patents on basic practices and processes and software systems and such, all kinds of obvious things have been patented. Now the classic example, this isn't really a high-tech one, but the classic example is that there is actually a patent on the process of using a laser pointer to play with your cat. It sounds like a joke. It sounds like, you know, something from a parody or something like that. It's true. You can look it up. I don't have the patent number right here. But it's there. It shows, you know, the cat, a pointer, and the whole thing. That's patented. That was approved.
That's crazy.
So what we have now, the problem we have now in technology is that there are so many patents on so many basic processes, using one click to do something, seeing a link and using it to connect to this kind of site. So if you take a modern product like a smartphone, whether it's an iPhone or an Android phone, whatever, there are tens of thousands, if not more, individual patents that encumber that product. And so what you have is these wars between all these different companies that are trying to essentially squeeze money out of each other on one hand, or trying to get patents protectively
right.
to protect themselves from having people trying to squeeze money out of them. And I have charts that show all the different companies with different colored lines pointing at how they're trying to sue each other, and it's just like a colored blob. So this is what you're hearing now about this latest Apple patent is just another chapter in that. Basically, Microsoft is trying to find a way to squeeze. You know, Microsoft is having problems, right? It was just announced today that they're not going to be doing a keynote at the CES, which they've typically done, and there's a lot of arguing, you know, did they pull out, were they kicked out? You know, it's not clear yet. But, you know, they have their Windows phone, and compared with the iPhone and with Android, it's really not doing very well at this point. So what they're trying to do, what Microsoft is trying to do, is find a way to get money out of the more successful phones. And one of the ways they're doing that is patent wars, especially against Android now, because there's no love lost between Microsoft and Google at this point. And so this is one of those patents. It's one of these patents where Microsoft is saying, we want a certain amount of money for every Android phone that's sold. Now, the really interesting thing about this particular patent is in Europe, the European regulators declared you couldn't even have the patent there because they declared it was an obvious thing. It was too obvious to be patented. But here in the U.S., hey, you can do a laser pointer with a cat, so you can pretty much patent anything.
That is amazing. iPad. Apple iPads versus the Kindle Fire, or what else is out there? Do you like them?
You know, tablets are in their early phases right now. And the iPad is an amazing device. I always get concerned with devices like that when you're always going to feel 6 months down the line that you probably should have held off for another 6 months. Now, you know, obviously you could take that forever. You got to at some point stop and buy the thing. But Apple runs a very closed shop, a very closed ecosystem. So once you buy your way into Apple, whether it's iPhone or iPad or any other similar devices that they're Apple controls, you're going to be kind of locked into that system. The reason I prefer myself the more open environments, whether it's Android operating system or something else, is because normally they're not as controlled. But there's no way getting around the fact that Apple has a tremendous lead in the tablet area. And just the fact that it's an iPad carries a lot of weight for buyers. So, the Kindle has come out now. That it has to be clearly one of the least expensive, I guess really the least expensive full-featured Android tablet. The reports on it are kind of mixed right now. There's some issues about the speed. Of course, it's locked to Amazon in some significant ways. Not that you can't unlock it with how to do it. There was a update that just came out, and there's conflicting reports about how that really improved things. I think the marketplace is still trying to find the right place for tablets in general, and not just the fact whether or not you have a tablet, but the size. Is it better to have a big tablet? Is it better to have a 7-inch tablet? How that's going to shake out, we just don't know yet. But tablets are in our future. That's for sure.
What's new in terms of technology that just knocks your socks off, Lauren? Anything?
Well, there's always there's always new things happening. I think what we're going to be seeing in the next year, for example, that's going to be extraordinary is this continuing march of acceleration of the power of smartphones in particular. We're going to be seeing quad-core smartphones commonly, and quad-core other devices also. And that just means a lot more power, a lot more processing power. I think there's going to be battery improvements. There really have to be. That's a really important area right now. But the things that we're going to be able to do with these more powerful portable devices in conjunction with higher speed wireless networks, with the LTE networks and the other fourth generation wireless networks are just beyond really what we can imagine right now, because we just haven't ever experienced that kind of power in something you can hold in your hand. So I think in general, wireless and portable devices are going to be just a spectacular area of change that we're going to see in this coming year.
And Lauren, you're right about the batteries. If you don't have a real heavy-duty battery in your smartphone, that thing eats up the power fast, doesn't it?
Yeah, some of the really interesting areas of research now in technology are trying to find ways to reduce the parts of you know, to reduce the power consumption for the parts of cell phones that, that tend to draw the most power. And one of those is usually the display, the backlight and the display. The backlight's a real power-hungry thing. So they're trying to find ways, and they have these now, just these haven't really hit hit the market yet. More displays that are more, you know, you, have you seen, you, you know, the normal Kindles have the e-ink displays.
Okay.
Right? They have those monochrome.
Yeah, I haven't used it. But
yeah, and those are a completely different kind of technology from LCD because when they're fixed in position, when they're not changing, they're not really pulling any power to speak of. So they're trying to, they're trying to find ways to get that kind of power-sipping technology or displays that don't need backlights. Like those early, like those black and white Kindles, but they could display full color, full motion, all those kinds of things, and that's coming. There's some that are flexible too, so you could theoretically take your smartphone, well, at least a display, and roll it up. I'm not sure why you'd want to do that.
I've got a charger in my office studio, a charger in my home, a charger in my car, a portable charger I take when I'm on traveling, and then I've got a little battery powered charger that you can use for like an hour's worth of phone time that you just plug into the phone. So it's always ready. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. That's something, that's a real good thing to have too. I think I have one of those the same thing you're talking about. It's actually a little external battery and you turn it on
and just plug it in,
and plug
it
into the phone and it provides external power. So I always keep one of those around, but this is something that has to be solved. We're increasingly, you know, when we go to quad core phones, that's going to pull more power because you've got four cores to power instead of just one or two. You know, basically, we're still waiting for those nuclear batteries, right?
I noticed the battery was made in China. Everything is made in China. Don't we even make them here?
I don't think so. We've basically, you know, sold our manufacturing soul to China. We did it willingly. You know, they didn't come here and take it from us. We basically said, okay, you do it, and we'll do everything else. And it's not quite clear what that everything else is anymore, is it?
Motorola, phones made in China, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
or wherever.
There's the whole. We do not have a manufacturing sector in this country anymore to speak of.
No, not really.
And it's this way all across the board, and it's hard to see how to ever get it back. You know, people say, "Well, we want to bring manufacturing back to the U.S." But to do that, you have to have the whole infrastructure. You have to have the supply chains and all the different things, and all of that is overseas now too.
Yeah, the equipment's gone. The robotics, it's all gone. Everything's gone.
The tooling, the machine tooling equipment, and the skills you need to run them, all of that is gone now.
And the labor. You got to get the labor down. And how's that going to happen?
I don't see how we can get manufacturing back now. I think that you know, it's just you wish you could do it, and you say, geez, there must be some way to do this. But I think that may be energy poorly spent now, because so much is necessary in order to do that, and we can't compete on a wage basis with those countries. So I think that's sort of a dream, but I don't see how we can accomplish it.
And what kind of a deal do you get? I mean, if you had a comparable product made in the United States and one made in China, what's the price difference? Is it ridiculously high here with U.S. labor?
You mean if you could build it here?
If you could do it here.
Yeah, it would be very much higher. Plus, it gets complicated because you have the currency relationships. It's not just a matter of what the raw material is and having the machinery to build it. I mean, remember, if you think about a piece of technology, here's a really good example. There were floods in Thailand recently. The flooding in Thailand caused the price of disk drives worldwide, especially here in the U.S., to peak up 150-200% practically overnight.
Wow.
Because the manufacturing base for making those disk drives, these are, you know, U.S. companies in name at least, but all their manufacturing facilities are over there, and the flooding caused all their plants to shut down. You know, but those plants cost enormous amounts of money to build, and who wants to invest enormous amounts of money in anything here anymore? Yeah, see, that's the other problem. You've got to get the cooperation of the banks and the people that control the financial parts of the country. And if you can't get the financing, you can't build the factories. And we're not, you know, we haven't been very good at long-term planning. It's all been short-term profit. This is how we've shot ourselves in the foot in so many ways.
Well, that's true. That is true too. Study came out that said that people are more likely to lie, to die. They had a headline problem, to die while texting. Do you believe that? Or maybe it means lie. You know, they've screwed up this article here. But it says people are more likely to lie by texting people as opposed to face to face.
Sure.
Of course, they're also more likely to die if they're texting while they're driving.
Right,
that's right.
Yeah, right.
So it's right on both fronts.
Yeah. I think that's certainly true. I think it's in terms of lying, certainly. We've seen this for years with email. You know, when I started using email about 1,000 years ago, at least it feels that way, it became obvious immediately that the farther you are from somebody in terms of technology in a lot of ways, the less you think of them as a real person and the more you think of them as someone you can lie to and manipulate and be dishonest with. So texting, because it tends to be little short messages, is probably the worst. Email, because it's all just written, is a little bit better, but still bad. A phone call is even better in terms of your honesty, because at least you get the emotional cues, you get the inflections, and you get all of that. And of course, when you're right with a person, then you get the whole thing. You get the inflections and the body language and the whole shebang. So I think it's true, and this is something people have to realize, because if you treat email and texting and such as if it's the same as being in the same room with someone or even being on the phone with them, you're liable to have misunderstandings. You can misunderstand sarcasm very easily. I mean, there have been what we call flame wars over that on the internet for decades. And I think a lot of people are still relatively new to these technologies. A lot of young people use texting, and they haven't necessarily been at this long enough to understand all the nuances. So this is a real issue. It's where technology meets psychology and sociology and all these other things, and we don't necessarily take the time to teach any of this to children or anyone else, so we shouldn't be surprised when there are problems.
I've been watching some advertisements for video games. These things are unbelievable since my day, Lorne. I mean, unbelievable. Of course, since my day, they played Pong.
Yeah, well, I couldn't even master Pong. I mean, that's the...
But, I mean, they're so lifelike.
And I think that's really we haven't really even really scratched the surface of that yet. I think that what was that I saw? Yes, there was an article within the last couple of days about work that's being done on simulating the singing voices of celebrities.
Okay. That's great.
And you remember there was a movie back maybe in the 80s called Looker? It was James Coburn and some other folks, but the concept was that there were people that were scanning using computer technology. This was a Michael Crichton concept, I think. I think he wrote it, and they were scanning models, you know, fashion models and other people,
right?
And they would use the computers to generate commercials and other features that involved them, but they were completely simulated. And of course, they'd kill the models, you know, once they had them scanned to get them out of the way, and you wouldn't have to pay them anymore, right? I think we're heading toward a period here where in video games and in other kinds of broadcast media and all kinds of other technologies, we're going to see a time when it's going to be very difficult to necessarily know whether the voice you're hearing or the image you're seeing is the real person, or if we're, you know, for example, we might be listening to a computer-generated George.
You know, I did that once during a little spoof, and it almost worked. Hold on, we're coming back for phone calls as we talk about technology and the Internet with Lorne Weinstein right here on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour will be our third guest who's behind the secret door. When we come back in a moment with Lorne Weinstein, we're going to take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Lorne, has technology sometimes gone too far? I mean, I remember the days, when we had just little pagers. We didn't even have cell phones to call people back with. Remember those days?
Yeah, I had one of those for a long time.
Yeah.
I think that question has probably been asked starting in one way or another with grunts in the cave and going forward all through history. I think at every step along the way, they've said, has technology gone too far? Look at these windmills. Look at these water clocks. No one's, you're doing it the way they used to. So I guess the answer is probably always the same, unless you want to use techniques like global thermonuclear war to stop technology, which would have side effects of killing us all.
Sure.
Technology is going to advance. That's part of human nature and part of, I think, what's fundamentally human. The question is, do we manage it properly? Do we treat it in ways that respect humanity and respect the earth and respect animals and all these other things? Do we rule the technology, or do we allow the technology to rule us? I think that's really the fundamental question.
Well, that's a good point. I happen to like technology. I think it's done marvelous things for us. It has made things convenient for us. I see primarily all upside.
I was talking to someone a couple of days ago about the fact, as you get older, you start to forget things, right?
It happens. It's just the nature of
aging. And to have a little device clipped on your belt or in your pocket that, your smartphone, that you can just pick up at any time and type a question or speak a question, just some fact that you've forgotten for the moment, a name, an address, a phone number, and to have that information instantly available, I think that's a pretty amazing thing. I think that's going to be a liberating thing for us as we age, because it's almost like reaching into a giant global brain to fill in those gaps that our own brain develops over time. I think that's a marvelous way that technology improves our lives.
I think so, too. Let's go to some of the phone calls. Lindsay, Ontario, we go. Hey, Brent, go ahead. Good to have you with us.
Hi. Hey, George. How's it going?
Good. Good.
I was just wanted to ask pretty much about the Bob Lazar story. I know a lot of people think that he's a phony and that he's a big liar. But I personally believe that, he's telling the truth. But I was just...
Okay, well, that's going to be an open line call right now. We've got Lauren Weinstein on talking about technology. Ian in Toronto, Canada. Go ahead, Ian.
Thank you, George. My question is, does our research in motion have a chance with catching up the Apple phones? Because 2.5 years ago, we were sitting on top of the world in Canada with our beloved research in motion.
Yeah, and in fact, it was just announced that the next generation of RIM devices are I guess going to be delayed until probably the end of next year.
Oh my God!
So the financial side of this is not where I have my expertise, but it looks to me like the days of BlackBerry and RIM may have passed by here. I think there were some strategic decisions that were perhaps not optimally made, and it sure looks like iPhone and Android in particular are going to really take over that niche that at one point was RIM. So, I mean, that's not to say that they may have some magic rabbit they can pull out of their hat. You really never know. But based on what you can see right now, it doesn't look too encouraging for them.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to know.
Thank you.
Yeah, what is going on with the BlackBerry Maker RIM? What's happening?
Well, they were slow. I think that's a major part of it. They were slow to recognize the changes that were occurring and the rise of real smartphones. The same thing could be said of Nokia. And it seems like the only thing that's keeping Nokia going now is their very tight new relationship with Microsoft. Otherwise, they'd probably be going down completely. And that's pretty amazing when you think about it, because it wasn't that many years ago when Nokia was like top of the heap. I had a Nokia phone. But this industry changes so fast that if you can't stay agile and change with it, it's not that you're necessarily making horrible errors in what you're doing, but you're not changing and evolving fast enough. And that's, I think, where you know, where it is with RIM now. It's pretty amazing when you think that it was just a couple of years ago when it was BlackBerry, BlackBerry, BlackBerry.
Yeah, that's true. Let's go to Warner Robins, Georgia. It's Tiberius with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Ty, go ahead.
Hello. Good morning, George Norrie.
Morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing good. Good morning, Mr. Price.
Good morning. Good morning.
I got a question for you, and I wanted to know, the government had issued out some cell phones, and I had noticed, like, it was just with the people that really doesn't, with the people that really doesn't have cell phones, because the people that got, that has the government issued phones, like insurance or whatnot, is usually the ones that ain't usually, don't usually have a cell phone. And see, what I was hearing is because, like, is it possible that these cell phones has a tracking device in it? Like, because, you know, I'm a Christian, you know, I'm into end time prophecies and stuff. And as far as what's been happening now, you know, is it a possibility that a lot of the technology that they're coming out with and that they're creating, could it be like also a downfall for mankind in the future? Because, like, it seems like a lot of things is leading up to the Antichrist system.
Well,
George, like I wanted to ask a general question for you, George, if you don't mind.
I tell you what, let's just get Lauren to answer this first and get his reaction, and then I'll come back to you, Ty. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think this kind of leads back to what I was saying a few minutes ago about technology. Who rules it? Is the technology ruling us, or are we ruling it? So the kinds of technology that are in modern cell phones now that it can involve location tracking, for example, can be used in different ways. It can be used to help you find where you're going. I mean, every cell phone is a map of the world, essentially, a driving map of the world. It can be used in various social contexts to meet up with people. It could also be used in negative ways if the data is not properly protected and not properly kept in the context of the particular service that you're supposed to be using. In other words, there's nothing inherently wrong or evil or bad about, for example, location data. The question is, what do you do with it? Do you handle it properly? Do you protect it? What do you do when, for example, the government comes along and asks for it? So this is it's not just a question of technology. It's a question of what your rules are. Do you trust the organizations that are handling the data? Do you trust the government to not make unreasonable requests? Blaming the technology is almost always a mistake in these kinds of situations. It's like that old Pogo cartoon, you know, we have met the enemy and he is us. The technology is a tool. It's like a hammer or a knife. And a hammer can be used to build things, and a knife can be used to survive in the wilderness. But, of course, you could also smash a skull with a hammer or slit someone's throat with a knife. So the technology is not where we need to be concerned. We need to be making sure that we use the technology and the data that the technology generates in responsible ways. And if we do that, that data can bring us great benefits, or it can cause great problems. That choice is ours.
All right, let's go back to Tiberius real quickly. Ty, what's your question for me?
Okay, the next question, and like I said, I'll just listen over the air. Like I said, I'm over here in the East Coast, Georgia, the Southern Hemisphere, and I'm a stargazer. And I've noticed here lately, we're actually beginning in 2010, I noticed there are new low-level bright stars in the sky. And I was wondering, like, are these stars? Because then in our hemisphere, there is a big, gigantic question mark. And, like, from listening over the Internet, I wanted to know, like, did these have anything to do with these comets and asteroids that's coming through the atmosphere?
Well,
because like I said, see, I'm over here in the East Coast.
Let me tell you, I'm not sure. I mean, that's a good question to ask someone like a Dr. Sky. I would doubt it, but I can't say no positively about that. Let's go next to Eugene, Oregon. Michael's turn on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, interesting subject. You know, I wanted to bring up a Outer Limits episode I saw. It's one of the new versions of the Outer Limits. It's called The Stream. And what it is, it's a scenario where everyone is hooked up to the internet neurally, to where they have these little devices that are hooked onto their temples. And it's like nobody has to read anymore, or all they do is, you know, like they're connected to the internet neurally, like a neural internet connection. And I was wondering, it's like, are we ever going to get to that point? Because they have technology now to where they can plug something into somebody's brain and they can actually see, you know, somebody that's blind can actually see like images or shadows in a certain sense. You know, I mean, how soon before we get to that point to where?
I think that's sooner than later, Lauren, don't you?
This is a really fascinating area, and it's advancing much faster than I think a lot of people would have anticipated. And this is the whole area of brain-machine interface, neural interfaces. And there are some really spectacular advances being made. And as the caller just said, there is work now on essentially artificial vision, where the brain is stimulated directly through a matrix of electrodes to present imagery. It takes training. It can only work in certain situations, but that's still a pretty amazing thing. There's something else that I saw recently that was really quite remarkable too, which is work that's being done to actually be able to, in a tricky kind of way, it's hard to explain, but what it boils down to is being able to see some of the imagery that a person sees. In other words, you can, through advanced MRI techniques, if you process all the data properly, you're actually able to interpret on a screen some of what someone is viewing themselves. It's not mind reading per se, but it means that we're learning a lot more about how the brain works, how it's wired, how it functions. I think that the day will come sooner than we would have thought when direct interfaces for some of this data will be possible. Will it be in our lifetime? I don't know. That seems kind of difficult. But I think it will come. If you just follow the timeline of advances in terms of neural research, the time when you may be able to actually plug in a direct neural interface instead of having to view it on a screen, I think that's a completely reasonable possibility.
Let's go to Providence, Rhode Island. Hey, Gunner, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen. Hey, in the 1980s, I was working for CompUSA, and I saw a video produced by Bill Gates and Steven Spielberg about what they projected technology would be like in the next 20 years. And one of those cool things was an integrated flat-screen monitor in the dashboard of the vehicles. And I'm thinking with the advent of the iPad, how soon do you think car manufacturers will smarten up and integrate that into their next product line?
Well, there actually are, you know, there actually are flat screen displays in some cars now that are being used for the navigation systems and control systems. You could basically feed those any data you wanted. There are Android-based systems that run in cars now. I think the bigger problem is going to be the legal structure around what data you can display without distracting people in a way that would be considered dangerous for driving, because you don't necessarily want people doing more fiddling around with a screen in their dashboard if they're the driver. But that's pretty much here now, actually.
Well, let's go to Duarte, California. Scott, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Scott.
Hi there. This is fantastic. Fantastic guest. And
it sure is.
I am so interested in this. I had touched on before, I just been on your show as far as explaining that I had been clinically dead approximately four times now. Jeez. And during that period, I was exposed to what I would call all knowledge of the universe. And since then, I had applied for a patent on a on two things, and one is a computer that would actually have thought, you know, for that would actually think for itself using, put it this way, all the knowledge that's out there on the internet. And
are they almost doing that now, Lorne?
There's certainly a lot of work done on, you know, gathering as much information as you can from the public internet and making intelligent analysis of that data. That's not the same as being self-aware, of course. We don't think. But then again, what is self-aware, right? What is consciousness? When you cross that dividing line, it may not necessarily be obvious from the outside. But yeah, there's a lot of work going on right now to not just gather pages, for example, and do search on them, which is itself an enormously complex task, but to actually analyze the data and draw conclusions from that data and new information from that. I think that's still in fairly early stages, but again, with the kinds of increases in computational capability we have now, things that were unimaginable just a few years ago are becoming very, very practical. So that's another area where there's going to be just unbelievable evolution quickly.
Let's go to Jason, Madison, Wisconsin, final caller. Go ahead, Jason.
Guys, another great show tonight. Thank you so much. Since the beginning of mankind, we've always been able to develop technology. I guess my question is, and I want to hear your opinions, will humans devolve, so to speak, if we can no longer develop innovative cutting-edge technology?
Will we still evolve? Yeah. Yeah,
I think so.
We would still evolve. We would evolve in different directions. But then again, you could say that a stone knife is technology at a certain time, and I think we would find other kinds of technologies to develop if we did not have the capability, for example, to work with the highly advanced electronics that we have. Not if there was an EMP burst and everything, you know, was burned out or something, we would still find technology to develop.
We sure would. Lorne, we're out of time. I want to thank you for being on the program.
Thank you so much, George. And again, you know, have a happy holiday. Merry Christmas. All the best for the new year to you and to all the listeners and the whole gang at Coast.
Absolutely. Up next, we will find out who's behind door number three, another secret door guest right here on Coast to Coast AM. Plus, I'll tell you what's in store on our next program as well. So we shall be right back in seconds. So don't touch your dial. Lorne Weinstein, our special guest. So I've guessed two of them now. Let's see if I can go three for three. We'll be back.